Hello, my name is Chrissy Champagne. You are listening to Residue, a true crime podcast dedicated to keeping you paranoid. This week's episode is going to be a little bit different. I'm going to be giving you a story sort of similar to the earlier episode I did on Poltergeist. And this is, you know, I was researching it thinking this is going to be another story about a cursed film set. But this one isn't quite cursed in the way that you think. This one was more of a horrific tragedy. And this is the story of Twilight Zone, the movie. Growing up, I was obsessed with Tales from the Dark Side, Alfred Hitchcock Presents, and The Twilight Zone. So obviously, I'm very excited when I hear that Twilight Zone is making a movie. And this movie was Steven Spielberg's idea to put together a movie, an anthology film, and it was going to have four segments. And the four directors were going to be Steven Spielberg, John Landis, George Miller, and Joe Dante. The movie was made in 1983, and the budget for the film was $10 million. It ended up grossing $42 million, so all in all, it was considered a commercial success. If you look at the Rotten Tomatoes scores right now on Rotten Tomatoes, you will see that it's not good. It's 60% critic and 55% audience. I would personally give it something higher just because, you know, nostalgia for me. But the reason that this movie gained notoriety is not because it got a lot of money at the box office or because any of these segments in it were, you know, mind-blowing. It was because of something horrific that happened on the set during the filming of John Landis's segment. John Landis is a huge American filmmaker. At this point, he was really blowing up, and some of his movies included National Lampoon's Animal House, The Blues Brothers, The Kentucky Fried Movie, An American Werewolf in London, Three Amigos, which, oh my goodness, shout out to my friends, Carrie and Courtney. We watched that every single day when we were younger. Beverly Hills Cop 3. He also directed Michael Jackson's music videos for Thriller and Black or White. When John Landis was young, he really aspired to become a filmmaker. He said that he watched the movie Seventh Voyage of Sinbad, and this was the movie where he was like, oh my God, this is what I'm doing with the rest of my life. I'm gonna make movies. One thing that Alfred Hitchcock always said is that when we watch a movie, we should always have a suspension of disbelief. Like, just watch the movie, get out of your own world, sit here, become a part of this new world for a few hours. And John was quoted. He had said about watching The Seventh Voyage of Sinbad, I had complete suspension of disbelief. Really. I was 8 years old and it transported me. I was on the beach running from that dragon, fighting that cyclops. It just really dazzled me and I bought it completely. And so I actually sat through it twice. And when I got home, I asked my mom, who does that? Who makes the movie? John was going to be directing the first segment of Twilight Zone the movie. This segment was going to be titled Time Out. It was not a full remake of one of the Twilight Zone episodes called Back There, but it was a partial reworking of it. Vic Morrow was going to play a character named Bill Connor, who was described as a bigot, and Bill Connor gets upset because at work he is passed over for a promotion in favor of his Jewish coworker. So if you know anything about the Twilight Zone, you're pretty much going to be waking up in some strange, messed up world if you're one of the characters. Now, a word-for-word plot synopsis of John Landis's segment is a loudmouthed, bigoted businessman with an intense hatred for Jews, Blacks, and Asians gets the tables turned on him when he walks out a bar and is inexplicably transported back in time to being pursued by Nazis in 1940s France, then as an African American at a KKK rally in the 1950s Deep South, and as a Vietnamese in 1960s Vietnam. That is the exact plot taken from the IMDb of Twilight Zone, the movie. My main source for research in this episode was the documentary series called Cursed Films, and this series is written and directed by Jay Cheel. You should check it out. It's an amazing series, and it gives a lot of insight into a lot of different movies, Poltergeist being one of them. And I did mention Jay Cheel's name in my Poltergeist episode if you want to go back and check that one out. It was earlier on. So Jay Cheel does an amazing job talking to other filmmakers, the set designers, the cast and crew, other stuntmen on the sets of these films. And the vice president of development at Blumhouse, Ryan Turek, he says film sets are controlled chaos. So Vic Morrow is cast as lead actor in this segment, and he took the part because he says that he was like really impressed with the fact that Steven Spielberg was a part of this movie, and he wanted to be involved just for that aspect. He wanted to do this film just because at this point his career wasn't going the way that he planned. He figured having this opportunity on a set with Spielberg was going to change everything. As excited as the cast and crew were to be anywhere on a set with Steven Spielberg anywhere near them, they were not so excited to be working with John Landis. And it was said that the cast and the crew considered Landis an erratic person. He was not very responsible, and the crew called him cavalier about safety. As I said earlier, this segment was going to involve a lot of different sets. Now, Richard Sawyer was the production designer on set, and he said that he loves to keep his sets as realistic as possible. Now, at the time, the studio thought that Vic Morrow's character is going to have some kind of redemption because this guy is just such an awful person. The only way that the studio would want the ending to go is if this awful person is now a hero to the audience. So they suggest that during the Vietnam scene, that the main character was going to have to rescue two orphans in Vietnam. Richard Sawyer goes on to create these spectacular, amazing sets. I mean, these look legit. He builds these huts, he has this whole swampy area, and then in one scene, the main character was supposed to be running through the jungle in Vietnam and being shot at the same time. Richard explained that when they were filming this scene, that John Landis wanted to use real bullets. He insisted on using real bullets. So that was already a mistake right there. It's already showing you, like, this guy does not care about anyone on set. He just wants his movie to turn out amazing. And that's perfectly fine. You want your movie to turn out amazing, obviously. But they also say in the docuseries that when you are making a large-scale production like this one, it just gives so much more opportunity for something horrible to happen. So you have to really, really stick to the rules. I mean, that's why there are rules. This is actually a job. They should not have had the main character, the main actor, Vic Morrow, do any of his own stunts, especially involving real bullets, and then to make him do the actual horrific stunt where Vic Morrow was going to have to be redeemed. The idea would be that Vic was going to be running through the swampy set, and he was going to have to carry two children underneath both arms as he was running. In the meantime, as he's running through this swampy area with two young children under each arm, he's going to be bombarded with bombs going off, fire going off, and a helicopter flying above his head. Mind you, this man is not a stuntman. He is just an actor who wasn't having the greatest time in his career right now, so of course he was gonna say yes to anything. This was a job for a stunt person, and I read an article by Kirk Cowett. I hope I'm saying his name correctly. It was written in July of 2023. The name of this article was called "Dirty Secrets of Stunt Work, a Job with a 100% Injury Rate." Now, these stuntmen, stuntwomen are trained to do this. They know what they're getting themselves into. Kirk writes in his article, "Did you know that stunt performers have the only job in the world with a 100% injury rate?" And then he's like, "You heard that correctly. Catastrophic accidents, head injuries, substance abuse, anxiety, depression, and even suicide have impacted the lives of every stunt performer I know." So if stunt performers feel that way, imagine how Vic Morrow felt. And he had told people on the set that he thought this was way too demanding, way too overwhelming, but he didn't feel he had a big enough voice to challenge the director on this. Richard Sawyer tearfully recalls this scene and his set and this moment when he spoke to John Landis about how they were going to get children to work on this scene. Now, it was illegal to work children after 8 p.m. at night. They wanted to film later. There would be explosions and a helicopter. The casting director said, "This seems dangerous." John Landis said, "Well, we'll just get the kids off the streets ourselves." Hiring children illegally. Most people on the crew said, "Dude, if we hire children illegally, we're all going to be sent to jail." They tested the scene over and over with a helicopter flying down. During one of the rehearsals, the crew said, "That one seemed a bit rough," as the helicopter exploded. And you also have the parents of these children that John Landis has now just taken off the streets and illegally paying them to be on this movie set at 2:30 a.m. in the morning. The parents are like, "Is this safe? Is this safe? Is everything okay?" John Landis was reported as saying about the explosion, "You think that was big? You ain't seen nothing yet." And he also had said to the parents of the children when they were asking, "Is this safe?" He said to them, "It's fine. It's safe. It's just like a Disneyland ride." Take after take, it's 2:30 in the morning. These explosions are huge. Vic is carrying both children. He's got one child under each arm. 7-year-old Micah Din Lee and 6-year-old Renee Shin Yi Chen. Their parents are standing by, watching all of this be filmed. Richard Sawyer and John Landis are standing very close to the edge of the water, and Richard realizes that things are getting way too close to the helicopter. The explosions are getting too close, and he realizes that they're going to need to run away. They're going to need to get away from this set. The explosions are just getting too big, and then it happens. One of the explosions comes way too close to the helicopter, hits it, damages the helicopter, and the helicopter falls right into the river, exactly where Vic was carrying both children. Vic Morrow, Micah Din Lee, and Renee Shin Yi Chen were all killed instantly. The children were hired after Peter Y. Tae Chen, Renee's uncle, was approached by a colleague whose wife was a production secretary for Twilight Zone, the movie. Chen thought of his brother's Taiwanese-born daughter, Renee, whose parents agreed to also let her participate in the film. He then called a Vietnamese colleague, Daniel Lee, who had a young son named Micah. Micah was an outgoing boy who enjoyed posing for pictures, so his parents figured that he would be interested in being in this film. Chen later testified that he was never informed that either of the children would be working near explosives or even near a helicopter. It was later admitted that both children were being paid under the table to avoid the permit laws for children working at night. The studio was fined $62,000 for willful and serious safety violations, allowing children to work without permits at 2:30 in the morning. These kids were on set working illegally. John Landis would end up going to all three funerals. Landis spoke at Vic Morrow's funeral, and what he said was this. He said, "Tragedy strikes in an instant, but film is immortal." He also said, "Perhaps we can take some solace that through his work in film, stage, and television, that Vic lives forever." I don't know why I find this a little disturbing. It is probably more disturbing when you watch the actual video of John Landis saying this, because to me, he just comes across as like, you know, look at me, I'm a famous filmmaker and I'm talking about my actor. It just doesn't seem sincere to me. And although, you know, a lot of people could have been to blame for exactly what happened on that set, because you can't just say it's just John Landis. Everyone else who contributed to it, no one else spoke up, but you gotta blame somebody. And he's the director, and he wanted to be, you know, the head guy. I'm the guy. So to stand up there at someone's funeral when you're basically the responsible party for having had this tragedy happen and say something like that, it just isn't, you know, like, read the room, John. Read the room. This whole incident now is going to be taken to trial, and the main question is going to be, who is responsible? Now, they try to blame the explosion expert, and the prosecutors will blame the filmmakers. At the trial, all four parents of the children would testify that they were never told there would be helicopters or explosions on set, and they had been reassured over and over that there would be no danger, quote, only noise. The trial would last 9 months between 1986 and 1987, and the filmmakers would all be tried and acquitted on charges of manslaughter. After John Landis was found not guilty, he spoke to the press and said, "Almost 5 years ago, an accident happened on the set of one of my films that killed three people, and nothing, none of this changes that. He paid fines, but he was innocent." Lloyd Kaufman is the president of Troma Entertainment and the creator of The Toxic Avenger. Troma Entertainment has rules on their sets. Here are their three rules: safety to humans, safety to people's property, and make a good film. "A movie is only a movie," says Lloyd Kaufman. He also says, "If I was responsible for somebody getting seriously injured, I would stop making movies. I would be selling shoes or hot dogs or whatever. Or maybe blowing my fucking brains out. I couldn't live with it. It's a dangerous profession, movie making." In a 1996 interview, John Landis also spoke again about the accident, saying, "There was absolutely no good aspect about this whole story. The tragedy, which I think about every day, had an enormous impact on my career, from which I may possibly never recover." Steven Spielberg co-produced Twilight Zone, the movie, with John Landis, but he soon broke off their friendship following the accident. Spielberg said that the crash made people grow a little and left everyone who worked on the movie sick to the center of our souls. He added, "No movie is worth dying for. I think people are standing up much more now than ever to producers and directors who ask too much. If something isn't safe, it's the right and responsibility of every actor or crew member on that set to yell, cut." Thank you so much for listening to this week's episode of Residue. I hope you will join me again next week. And if you could, and just be so sweet of you, if you could share my show with your friends, if you could share my show on social media, or just come find me on socials. And I am on Instagram at Residue Podcast. I'm also on Facebook at Residue, a true crime podcast. I do have a TikTok, but I'm like way too old to understand how to use it. So I don't know. I need some pointers on that. Anyway, you all rule, and I hope that you're here again next week. And don't forget to stay safe and stay paranoid.